From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm perennial time man of the year, first runner-up, Bill Curtis. And here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. Thanks, everybody. You have heard, no doubt, about the importance of STEM education. That's science, technology, and I don't know the rest because I was an English major.
We don't need the last two because this week we're going to blind you with science. It's a series of interviews with people who did the math, so you don't have to.
We'll start with the science of spycraft, Robert Baer, the longtime CIA operative who was played more or less by George Clooney in the movie Syriana. He joined us in January of 2015, and I started by asking him how he got into the agency in the first place.
I did this as a joke.
No, really?
Yeah, I was at Berkeley and bored and called them up one day at the Federal Center, and they sent me an application, 50 pages long, and I filled it out. And I thought, they're never going to hire me. My mom was a commie. You know, she used to teach at UCLA, and I was a ski racer, drugs, the whole thing, and they hired me.
Wow. Were you upfront about everything in your 50-page application?
I didn't really get into the LSD stuff, but you know, this is Aspen in the 60s. Come on. I mean, this was snow capital USA. There's cocaine. Everything was there. And they should have known that. Seriously, I didn't think I was going to get hired. And, you know, go to the Fennel Center, and there's this, invite you in a hotel and call you up to the room and ask you all these questions. You like guns. You know, you want to go overseas and be a spy. And I said, no, well, you know, I don't know. Yeah, I guess. It was, you know, I was 21 years old. What did I know?
Really? I don't know, I guess?
They called me and they said, can you be in Washington in 2 weeks? And I said, I could be there next week. And in 3 months, I was jumping out of an airplane with a machine gun. And by then, I figured that was serious.
Yeah.
Wow. So it was only 3 months of training before you were jumping out of an airplane with a machine gun?
Yeah, it was amazing. They sent you the paramilitary course. They sent you, it was 2 years of training, and that's without the language. It was another 2 years of Arabic. So they did it right away. They kicked a night jump, too, and showed you all these. I didn't even own a gun. You know, these firing guns and blowing stuff up. And
what do you think attracted them to you?
I lived in Europe for a bunch of years, spoke a bunch of languages, could go away and didn't care. I think they like the ski racing thing. You know, a downhill racer, he's got to be a little bit crazy.
No, it's interesting because usually on the few occasions I've talked to intelligence agents, they all sort of chuckle and say, oh, no, it's nothing like you see in the movies. You sound like you could
it's
be
like
in
that.
A movie, like downhill ski racer, bon vivant drug user from Aspen, secretly a spy who jumps out of planes with machine guns.
Back to drugs and training. Did they like do like training where they'll give you a whole bunch of weed or LSD and see how much you can drink or smoke before you get too stoned, or so your body can get used to it?
No, by the time they got in, you were just done with that. You know, you smoked a joint and you were fired.
Really?
But Brian has just described something he calls Friday night.
Yeah.
So.
Well, at what point was there a point? Was it like when you were jumping out of the airplanes or? When you said to yourself, I actually like this. Because you were in the company for, like, what, 3 decades, right?
Yeah. You know, it was more like, what in God's name am I doing here?
Yeah.
When I tried to assassinate Saddam Hussein and I was up there and there's shells going back and forth and I was in my REI jacket holding a Kalashnikov watch in the middle of a battle and then almost getting indicted by the FBI for attempted murder of Saddam Hussein, then I really was asking myself, what am I doing here?
Wait a minute.
You just said that real casual.
Wait, they're
all right,
the good guys.
Let's slow down and take this beat by beat. So hang with me here. So when was this exactly?
This was 1995.
1995, so post-Gulf War.
Yeah, I was sent to Iraq to get rid of Saddam Hussein. And I didn't have all the paperwork done completely, but I said I was close enough, so I launched. And no one had told the White House or the FBI, so when I came back, you know, the FBI sort of met me at the airport, and my whole team.
So presumably they let you go.
Yeah, I have a letter of declination declining to prosecute me for murder. It's sort of, you know, a lot of people have brag walls, but I got one of these.
That's pretty cool. So, Robert, I just have to ask quick, did you have any, like, cool gadgets?
Oh, I had a lot of them. They were, you know, we had pens that fired, you know, silenced bullets. They were great.
Really?
Yeah. They're called subsonic. They're chemical bullets, and they fire out of a Bic pen.
Can I ask you something? When you get a thing like that, when you get a pen like that, did you ever, like, just shoot through an office wall with it because you couldn't resist trying it out?
Well, there were accidents. I had my Kalashnikov was full of explosive rounds, and I like to keep a round in the barrel. But my bodyguard didn't realize that, so he was playing with the trigger while I was in at lunch or something and pulled the trigger, and the entire explosives ran with the bottom of their new Toyota. Just completely blew it apart.
I have to say, you know, it's been a rough couple of years for the CIA, and you're not really building up my confidence. So let's talk about the most important thing about your career as an international spy, and that is romancing the ladies. I'm sure that happened a lot, right?
Yeah, and got you a lot of trouble.
Really?
I used to date the daughter of a KGB general, and that just flipped them out.
Really?
Oh, my God.
So she was the daughter of a general in the KGB. Did it make for, like, awkward dinners when you went out with her and her parents? So how's work, you know?
No, their mom was cool. One time I got stuck in Moscow, and she diverted an airplane for me.
Oh, my God.
Wow. That sounds like some E-Harmony. This will be...
That's... Did you, during any of this, have a code name?
I had a bunch of them. I used to carry 4 or 5 passports in my pocket, different nationalities, well, different names.
Really? Well, did you have a cool code name? Like, you know, I'm thinking 00 is what I'm thinking.
No, they gave you just dumb names. You know where they got them from?
Where?
Got them from a Melbourne telephone directory.
Really?
Old one from 36. They thumbed through it and they said, here, how would you like to be this guy?
Crocodile Dundee.
I wanted to ask you about Syriana, that movie, which and George Clooney plays a character who's not you, but somewhat like you, was based on a book that you wrote about your adventures in the Middle East. And isn't it true that, like, George Clooney had to, like, gain all this weight to play you?
It was the whole thing was very weird, and the director looked just like George Tenet, who was the director when I was there. George Tenet and I went to school together. And he never particularly liked me because I once ran him down in the library. I was on a motorcycle. Finally,
wait a minute. You ran him down in the library?
At Georgetown University, yeah.
And you were on a motorcycle?
Yeah.
And, who are you, the Fonz?
Wait a minute. You were on a motorcycle in the library?
Yeah.
What happened to you? I mean, was there any consequences of riding your motorcycle in the library?
Well, see, that's like 20 years later. I see this guy in the White House who's working for Clinton, his National Security Advisor for Intelligence. And he walks up to me and says, I'll never forget you.
Well, Robert Baer, we are delighted to talk to you and could all day. But instead, we've asked you here to play a game we're calling...
All right, I'm ready.
Well, you've been tapping our phones all week, so you know we're going to ask you, Robert Baer, about bears. Answer two correctly, you win our prize. One of our listeners, Bill, who is Robert Baer playing for?
He is playing for Christian Sauerbaum of Stockholm, Sweden.
All right, you ready to do this, Robert?
Oh, God, I don't know.
Well, come on. You have all the intelligence assets of the United States behind you.
that's what worries me.
I know. In 2010, a large bear raided the home of a New Hampshire family and took what before leaving? A, millions of dollars in negotiable bonds. B, a teddy bear. C, the owner's collection of Ricky Lee Jones records complete on vinyl.
The records. He took the records.
No, the bear took the teddy bear. That's odd because, of course, bears like tiny little stuffed adorable humans. Next question. You still have two chances here. In 2011, a California family went outside to discover that a bear had done what? A, stolen their Toyota Prius. B, drunk the entire contents of their hot tub. Or C, eaten everything in the garden except for the arugula.
Oh, it didn't eat the arugula.
You think a bear would, like, turn up its nose at arugula?
Yeah, absolutely, sure.
They do like good gas mileage.
They do.
They do.
No, he stole their Prius.
No.
The bear stole the Prius. At 3:30 a.m.
You're making this up.
No, I'm not. At 3:30 a.m., a California homeowner was awoken by this huge noise. And he woke up, and there's a black bear inside his Prius. And the Prius is rolling down the driveway because the bear has sort of attacked the inside trying to get out, and he's ripped up the gearbox, and it's went into neutral, and now he's rolling down the driveway.
Oh, that's, I've got a Prius. It's easy to do.
There you go. Last question. You see if you can get this one right. Here we go. Sometimes a bear just doesn't want to do something harmless and borrow your car or take your teddy bear. It's coming after you. In 2010, a Montana woman successfully fought off a 200-pound black bear trying to attack her in her house by doing what? A, reading it her collected poetry. B, throwing a zucchini at it. Or C, attacking it with a bear claw pastry held in each hand.
Arr. The zucchini.
You're right, Robert. Yes, zucchini. And we looked this up. It is worth reading to you all a portion of the news account of the incident. Quote, the bear turned its full attention to the woman in the doorway. She retreated into the house and tried to close the door, but the bear stuck its head and part of a shoulder through the doorway. The woman held onto the door with her right hand. With her left, she reached behind and grabbed a 14-inch zucchini she had picked from her garden earlier. She threw the vegetable. It bopped the Bruin on the top of its head, and the animal fled.
There we go.
There you go.
Anything can be used as a weapon.
Is that part of your CIA training?
Yep.
Really? Grab a zucchini and be prepared to kill.
Yeah. Notorious.
The Saddam Hussein story would have gone totally different if you'd used...
If I'd only had zucchini.
Zucchini, no. Instead of tanks. You can sneak up on a man with a zucchini.
Bill, how did Robert Baer do in our quiz?
Robert Baer did 1 out of 3, and by the Langley scoreboard, that's a win.
There you go. By ours, though, sadly, it's not. However, we're very glad to talk to you, and we wish you luck with your new book, which is called The Perfect Kill, 21 Laws for Assassins. Robert Baer, thank you so much for joining us.
When we come back, we go to space with astronaut Sonny Williams and then down the runway with fashionista Simon Doonan. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Support for this podcast comes from TNT with Public Morals, a new series set in 1960s New York. Here is creator Edward Burns describing the Public Morals Division.
These cops work in Public Morals. Public Morals is what typically would be called today the Vice Division. Back then, they referred to these crimes as victimless crimes. Primarily, it dealt with gambling, prostitution, and anything to do with alcohol and the blue laws.
Watch Public Morals series premiere Tuesday, August 25th at 10, 9 Central, only on TNT.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Bill Curtis, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you so much, everybody. So, this week, we are taking a moment to pretend that our show is actually useful by teaching you science, using really small words and not really talking about much science at all.
Think of it as science for dummies. For dummies.
We went down to Houston in June of this year, and of course we're going to talk to an astronaut there. We were lucky to find Sunita Williams on the ground, as she's spent more time in space than almost any other woman alive.
Peter wanted to find out how on Earth she started her journey off it.
So I wanted to be a veterinarian, and actually...
Whoa, you screwed that up.
sort of went the wrong turn, and actually didn't get into the universities that I wanted to do that, and ended up under the influence or guidance of my older brother to go to the Naval Academy.
Wait a minute. You went to the U.S. Naval Academy as, like, a backup school?
Well, my brother said they liked to camp, and we camped when we were kids, and so he said I'd like it, and I did.
Really?
Yeah.
You went to the U.S. Naval Academy because you like to go camping.
Yeah.
You know, they're generally on boats, the Navy.
Yeah, I missed that point a little bit.
Okay.
So I finished there and was trying to figure out what to do. At the end of that, we get to pick by our class standing, and I was not the top, not the end, somewhere in the middle. And I wanted to be a diver because I was a swimmer. I didn't get that billet, but at the same time, Top Gun came out, so I thought I would be Tom Cruise and go fly airplanes. So that was my goal.
Really?
Wow. Yeah.
So we owe it to Tom Cruise that you're here with us?
Yeah.
I never thought about it that way, but I guess so. Well,
hey, Tom.
Yeah.
So seriously,
you,
did you like, okay, you know, send me to Miramar. I want to be a fighter pilot. Is
yeah,
that what you did?
Yeah.
And what happened?
Well, I didn't get to do that.
Oh.
I flew helicopters, which actually is the second best view of the Earth. The first best view is,
right.
I think,
so
a little
now
bit
you're,
higher.
So now you're like, you're a helicopter pilot, flying combat helicopters, right, off of aircraft carriers, thinking, I wonder if it's too late for veterinary school, but hey.
So I was sort of curious about how helicopters work, because it was sort of a mystery to me. You know, you stick the key in or whatever, you raise a collective in the cyclic, and you start to fly, and I'm like,
sure.
How the heck does this thing work? So I wanted to learn how to figure that out, so I went to test pilot school. And that's the first time I actually came down here to Johnson Space Center and met real astronauts and learned what they did and thought that would be pretty cool, too. Almost cooler than Tom Cruise. So what the heck?
This sounds very accidental.
That's life, yeah.
You know, I mean, a lot of people are like, well, I did this and I did that, and I ended up in a trailer with three kids. You ended up on the International Space Station, which you have been to how many times?
Two times.
Wow. Only twice?
Only twice.
Twice, okay.
But for long times each time.
But so you still hold the record, I'm told, for the longest spacewalk.
Yeah, well, the number of them.
Most number of spacewalks.
For women.
For women.
As my husband would say, not bad for a girl.
Not bad for a girl. Okay.
Did you ever get to do any experiments involving an animal and finally say, I got this veterinary thing done?
Well, as a matter of fact, we had spiders, Egyptian jumping spiders up there.
That sounds like a horror movie.
They were scary, actually. They've got eight eyes on their heads, and they do everything by sight, so as soon as you like look at their little container, they look up at you like this.
Oh.
It's a little nerve-wracking.
So
what were they there for?
Yeah.
Actually, it was an experiment suggested by a kid who lives in Egypt, and he knew about these types of spiders, and he wanted to see if they would adapt. Because they're like Spider-Man. When they see their prey, they jump at it, and they sort of let their little string down and grab the thing and eat it. And so in space, you can't really jump.
What Spider-Man does. But I'm sorry. But anyway, you're saying, so the spider can normally, when it's in Egypt, say, jump on things and eat them. And the question was what they would do in space, in microgravity. And so what did the spiders do?
Well, they figured it out, but it took a little while. Initially, they were a little bit frustrated, and they were running around.
I'm just imagining these spiders going, ah!
So what were they frustrated by? Their web didn't go where they wanted it to because of the lack of gravity?
Yeah, exactly. Oh. So they were trying to jump, but if you, like, jump in space, you're just going to jump up.
Even if I were a spider, I'd be like, wow!
Exactly.
Does it ever get either claustrophobic or boring spending that much time in a big tube? Like
absolutely
that?
Not. There's just so many cool things to do. We're busy. When I was up on my first flight, we were really putting it together, so I was essentially a construction worker. On the second flight, we were doing a lot of science experiments, and we've got a really cool window called the cupola. It's a big circular window with six panes around, sort of at an angle, so you can see the Earth, you can see the edge of the Earth, you can go out, look out into the universe. It's pretty spectacular.
So you spent a lot of time out there.
In the window? Looking in the window? Yeah.
Do you think they might need a comic?
Absolutely.
Oh, man, that would be the greatest. I don't even want to come back. You can just let me go.
What do you do for entertainment?
So we try to keep it a normal day while we're up in space. You know, you don't want to change your time cycle too much. So we just keep it normal. And so about 5 or 6 o'clock at night after we finish working, we knock it off by having pre-recorded shows that we watch sometimes through the computer while we're eating dinner. And then a lot of people...
While you're eating dinner, you watch shows? Oh, that's not right. You know, family time
know.
At the table.
It's not good.
They say that's the They're number right. one thing to keep kids off drugs. How can you keep it? Like, your first night in space, how could you even sleep? What do you mean keep it normal?
They're not going to take you if you're going to be like this.
Paula, you need to calm down. Paula, you need to be saying, that sounds great. Wow, I really have no problems with you at all.
Yeah. Hey, let's watch TV over dinner and go to bed early. What do you say?
Yeah.
There you go. It's not like we're going out anywhere.
Well, Sonny, we have invited you here to play a game we're calling...
First month is free.
You have spent a lot of time in outer space. So we thought we'd ask you three questions about storage space. Answer two of these three questions about the wonderful, fascinating world of rental storage units, and you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl Castle's voice. Bill, who is Sonny playing for?
Wilson Chang of Houston, Texas.
There you go. He's out there somewhere. Here's your first question. As you probably know, people often bid for the contents of abandoned storage units, sight unseen. Well, one unit bought at auction near here in Houston turned out to contain what? A NASA space rocket, B, 20 years worth of ZZ Top's beard trimmings, or C, 4,000 never-used Houston Oilers Super Bowl champion T-shirts.
Ouch. Ouch.
Never used.
Wow. Wow. C?
C, you're going to go for C, the Houston Oilers Super Bowl champion T-shirts?
Yes, C.
You are a hopeful crowd. No, it was actually the NASA space rocket.
Get out of here.
They opened
what are we
it up
doing?
And they found a Delta relay rocket from the 60s that had just been put in there and forgotten about.
God.
All right. We really don't.
All right.
You guys don't keep track of those?
All right.
Wow.
Next question. You have two more chances here. Don't worry about it.
Help me out, guys.
Okay. Next question. During an episode of the show Storage Hunters, the show's hosts opened up a storage locker to find that the previous owner had left what behind? A, comedian Dennis Miller. B, another storage locker containing another even smaller storage locker. Or C, a swarm of angry bees that the previous owner had put there for safekeeping.
You think so?
They're either buzzing or they're applauding in a very strange regional way.
So
you're going to go for the bees. Yes, it was the bees. We don't know why. We don't know why the prior owner had decided to put a beehive in there, but the bees really didn't appreciate it based on their attitude when the door was opened. All right. Last one. A man in North Carolina is being sued by the previous owner of a storage locker he purchased at auction. The previous owner says he may have given up the storage locker, but he wants his what back? A, his groove. B, his baby back. Or C, his leg.
Going for C again.
Yes, it was his leg. Man named John Wood was keeping his amputated leg in a barbecue smoker, as one does, so he could be buried with it someday. But the new owner realized the potential of having a human leg in a barbecue smoker and started charging adults $3 and children just $1 to look at it and didn't want to give the leg back. Bill, how did Sonny do in our quiz?
Sonny proving why she's called Sonny. She's a winner! Two out of three!
Yes. Sonny Williams is a pilot and astronaut who has spent a total of 322 days in orbit on the International Space Station and one of the people paving the way for NASA's journey to Mars and beyond. Sonny Williams, thank you so much for being on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Now there are those who might not call fashion science. Well, those people haven't had to figure out what to wear to bar mitzvah in Croatia on Easter Sunday like some of us have.
Simon Dunin is one of the reigning experts on fashion in the world of fashion, but he got his start working for Barney's, the men's store, doing the windows.
Well, at the time I went to Barney's in the mid-80s, my boss told me, make the windows a talked-about thing. So, you know, it was around about the period where they were calling Margaret Thatcher the Iron Lady.
Mm-hmm.
So I put her in an S&M outfit, made a caricature of her, put her in the window ironing and listening to Metallica, you know, in a dungeon.
Were you able to, I mean, how do they sell clothes, though? Did people see the S&M Margaret Thatcher, then walk into Barney's and say, I'd like one of those, please?
Over and over again, and that was just the men.
Really? You are now Barney's creative ambassador at large. What does that mean?
It means that I get to wear a sash.
Oh, there you are.
I'm wearing my sash right now. I ironed it specially for this broadcast.
Does it have like medals on it and ribbons in the manner of the classic ambassador?
It does, but I think to be a proper ambassador, you have to be terribly fat, don't you? Like, the sash looks much better on a corpulent physique.
How, when people ask you for fashion advice, as I'm sure they must do, what do you tell them?
Well, I actually give terrible advice.
Yes.
I'm very reckless. Like, I'm not one of those helpful gays, you know?
No.
Like, you know, like Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. I actually auditioned for that show, and they rejected me because they said, you're just not helpful enough. They showed me a picture of some guy with a mullet and a Metallica T-shirt, and I said, he looks great. What is it called? I don't have that. I see clothes as being nonverbal communication. They're anthropology. They're not something I want to change. So, which makes me completely useless at giving advice. So in the absence of having any useful advice, I usually tell people, you know, go out and buy a blue stripper wig, you know, or go home and take all your sensible work clothes and give them to the Goodwill and just wear party clothes for the rest of your life. If you can establish a signature look that is recognizable, that is yours, bingo, you've made it, darling.
What if your wife doesn't let you leave the house with your signature look?
And you've been wearing that leopard jumpsuit again.
Well, Simon Doonan, we have asked you here to play a game that this time we're calling...
Fatal System Error. Please reboot.
Since you got your start designing beautiful, strange, and useful windows, we thought we'd ask you about clumsy, awful, and annoying windows. Namely, Microsoft Windows. Answer two of these three questions correctly, and you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl Castle's voice in their voicemail. Bill, who is Simon Doonan playing for?
Anna Schulman of San Francisco, California.
All right. Ready to do this, Simon?
Yes, I'm completely technologically idiotic, so this is going to be interesting.
It shall be. Here we go. Now, like many famous brands, people have tried to take advantage of Windows's popularity. Which of these was a Windows-branded product you could once buy in Japan? A Windows 7 Whopper at Burger King with seven, count them, seven all-beef patties. B, Windows brand lingerie. Or C, Windows for your house.
I'm going to go with B, because I love lingerie, brassieres, negligees, anything like that. So let's go with B.
I'm fond of them, too, but before I give you the answer, how do you think Windows lingerie would work? Would there be little windows you'd open up?
Yep.
I mean...
You know, a good piece of lingerie screams for a little aperture, doesn't it?
It does. So you're choosing a Windows lingerie. Oh, would that it were. It was really the Windows 7 Whopper with seven all-beef patties. I know, but it was a thing. Second question. You can still have two more chances here, Simon. If you have trouble with Microsoft Windows and you call their helpline somewhere in the world, you might be helped by which of these? A 5-year-old boy. B, a computer running Microsoft Windows. C, Bill Gates himself, but only on Tuesdays and alternate Fridays.
Well, C is so preposterous that I'm going to go with C, because that would be kind of great, wouldn't it?
It would be great, perhaps, and I don't think you need to do this, but some people like to choose which one is actually likely to be true. And that's just an option. You don't have to do that. I'm just...
You know that fashion people are completely idiotic.
So right.
I want to stay on message.
I understand that instinct. You're going to choose Bill Gates.
Yes. Bill.
I'm not going to talk you out of it, but it was a 5-year-old boy.
And wow.
Kidding.
Yeah, 5-year-old Ayan Qureshi of Coventry, England, passed a Microsoft exam and is now an accredited Windows IT expert who's qualified to give out help. Last question. Back in 2009, to get the word out about Windows 7, Microsoft encouraged people to do which of these things that no one, we assume, actually did? A, throw a Windows 7-themed house party. B, get a Windows 7 face tattoo. Or C, hold a neighbor hostage until he or she downloaded and installed it.
I'm going to go with A because it sort of screams Tupperware, doesn't it?
It does, and you're right.
There we go.
Was it people? There's actually a hilarious video demonstrating how such a house party would go that we cannot recommend highly enough. It is amazing to watch Microsoft's version of what they think actual human beings might speak to each other. Bill, how did Simon Doonan do in our quiz?
You know, Simon is a great window preparer. Simon, you're doing really well. Thank you.
That was very diplomatic.
That's the nicest way of saying you lost.
Yeah, I know. I'm just going to skip the whole topic. That was hilarious.
You tried so well.
Simon Doonan's latest book is in paperback now. It's called The Asylum, True Tales in Madness from a Life in Fashion. Simon, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Simon.
Really fun to talk to you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
When we come back, finally something my degree prepares me for, the science of rhyme, as exhibited by our own limericist and the best hair in government. We'll be back with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR. Support for Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me and this very podcast, as well as the following message, comes from Blue Apron. That's the new service that delivers all the ingredients you need to make incredible meals at home. Farm fresh ingredients are perfectly portioned and come with an easy to follow recipe card, so you can create a delicious meal in 35 minutes or less. You'll cook meals like tandoori spiced chicken with green lentils, eggplant and cucumber mint yogurt, roasted tapir with palm fronds. All right, I made that last one up. But you can discover a better way to cook. Visit blueapron.com/wait to get your first two meals free. That's blueapron.com/wait, W-A-I-T. And thanks.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Bill Curtis. And here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. So we are talking science this week. We are talking science. We personally are not good at science, except for one area where we claim absolute mastery, if you have a really loose definition of science.
Every week we present three limericks written by our resident limericist, Philip Godica. He has a master's in limerick science from the Limerick Institute, located, of course, on Nantucket.
Here's a good example of his work from May of 2015. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Caitlin calling from beautiful downtown Tucson, Arizona.
I am a fan of Tucson and a particular fan of downtown Tucson, so good for you.
Why, thank you.
That's great. What do you do there in downtown Tucson?
Surprisingly enough, I actually helped to market downtown Tucson.
Really?
Mission accomplished.
I feel like you owe me $50. Caitlin, welcome to the show. Bill Curtis is going to read for you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly, and two of the limericks will be a big winner. You ready to play?
I hope so.
Here's your first limerick.
I'm a Mapplethorpe-Rottweiler mixture. When my tail wags, the camera goes click-sure. For my visual blog, follow Instagram dog. I'm a mutt who is taking your
picture.
Yes! Nikon has released a new camera, especially for dogs. This is because dogs are the only mammals around who still might want to buy an actual camera. The cameras are attached to your dog's chest by a strap. When they see something that makes them excited, and the dog's heart rate accelerates, the camera snaps a picture, which then gets sent directly to you.
So you get a lot of dog butts.
Yeah, basically.
That's great. Squirrel.
Pile of something not edible.
Yeah.
Back tire.
Person's leg, close, far, close, far, close, far, close, far. Here is your next limerick.
Some botanicals don't come from plants, but from insects, if given the chance. I'm putting my still right by this soft hill. My gin is made mostly from...
Oh, tell me it's not ants.
It is ants. Yes, ants. We should say ants, the insect, not ants, your mother, your sisters. At long last, a distiller is selling anti-gin. That's gin flavored with, quote, the essence of 62 ants. Because sometimes you want to skip the five or six drinks you'll need to throw up and just do it immediately.
It's three. What's ant essence?
I don't know. We're told that it's sort of a citrusy flavor. Yeah, who knew?
Do they have to kill the ants to get their essence?
Oh, no, Bob. They put them in a retirement hill afterwards.
Okay.
They send them to a farm. No, they attach them to tiny little milking machines to milk their essence.
Yeah. I'm ant milk intolerant.
Oh.
Here is your last limerick.
Because you humans are rude when conversing. After shearing, we're quickly dispersing. This mild-mannered flock doesn't like shepherd's talk. They beat sailors by miles with their...
cursing.
Cursing, yes, very good.
Good for you, Caitlin.
An Australian sheep farmer may lose his flock after neighbors complained that he was using bad words in front of his sheep. Everyone knows... sheep are very sensitive to harsh language. Must be kept pure and innocent. You don't want your little sheep going, ba ba, mother bleeping, ba. Bill, how did Caitlin do in our quiz?
Caitlin got 3 right.
They're well done. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
And, of course, no show about science would be complete without our own Paula Poundstone's continuing efforts to question the scientific method. Amy, a new study by the London School of Economics says there's one activity that makes us so unhappy, the only thing we rank worse than it is being physically ill. What is it?
Is it done in the home?
No, specifically. Well, sometimes. Some people do it in the home. I'll give you a hint. It's like, hi-ho. Hi-ho.
Working.
Oh, crap. Yes, working.
Oh, working at
home? Working
is
the word. No, working in general is the worst thing ever. The researchers...
But wait!
Yeah, it's been proved. Researchers sent questions to thousands of subjects at random times of the day via a smartphone app, and they asked what they were doing and how they felt. The people who answered at work reported being more miserable than everybody, except for the people who answered currently vomiting.
So wait a minute, but there were people working at home or people just working?
People just working. If they say,
No.
Take it away, Paula.
I'd like to know how they did the study.
Why did you explain?
Okay, yeah, but to whom did they send the question?
Apparently they sent it to an appreciatively random enough group of people they could get a good response.
No. Are you working right now?
I am.
Is it a step away from vomiting?
I'd have to vomit and see which I prefer.
It's only fitting that we end our show with the chief scientist of the United States, Dr. Ernest Moniz, the Secretary of Science Things.
Actually, he's the Secretary of Energy, and he joined us in October of last year, right after a string of Secret Service failures at the White House. But we started with a much more important topic. Could you describe your hair to the audience? Because I'm sad they cannot see you.
Well, I'm afraid it's been described for me, for example, on the blogosphere as... the best hair in the cabinet since 1794. I've been compared with the psychotic assassin in No Country for Old Men, Javier Bardem figure.
Yeah. So your hair is sort of long and lush, and it goes down almost to your shoulders. Is that right?
It kind of flows and a little bit curly.
When did you acquire this hair? Well, I mean, obviously.
What the hell?
Yeah, I'm desperate to know where I can get some. Yeah. No, I mean, what I mean to say is, when did you first adopt this hairstyle? That's what I meant to say.
It was when I went to California. That's what happens when you go to California from the East Coast. I was a graduate student at Stanford.
Right. So you went out to Stanford in
the 70s.
In the 70s, and so it is a hairstyle that is redolent of the 1970s.
It's kind of redolent of all the 70s, the 1870s, the 1770s.
Pretty much.
A lot of people came away from the 70s with a mullet, sir. So I think you've made the right choice.
I wanted to ask you, as someone who has to translate science to the layperson, to congressmen in particular, what is it like to explain, say, climate change, right, to someone who is really dumb?
I can assure you I have some excellent conversations with members of Congress, both parties, both chambers. And frankly, I believe the argument is largely over as to whether we need to address climate change. We have to decide together how we're going to do it.
What do you do on a daily basis when you're the Secretary of Energy? Does that have anything to do with riding a bike?
Well, we do encourage, of course, efficient transportation. We have many missions. Our big one, of course, right now is supporting the president's initiative on climate change, going to clean energy. But I might also add the Department of Energy has a second side, which goes back literally to World War II in terms of managing our nuclear weapons and trying to free the world of dangerous materials.
Do you ever get to take one home to impress your wife?
No, just the occasional picture, of course.
I understand. Are you a self-described nerd? Are you somebody who would call yourself a nerd?
No, I would not, actually.
Really?
Even though I came from MIT, kind of known as Nerdville, right?
Are you a nerd hero? I mean, do people come up and admire you because of your scientific achievements?
Yes, that often happens, frankly. And by the way, I must say,
explain to me the last time that happened. Where you were somewhere, sir. You were out just at a 7-Eleven or something. And someone came up with admiration over your scientific achievements.
I would say yesterday.
It happened yesterday. Wow. Take that, Poundstone.
Okay.
So, all right. So what happened? I want to hear about this. I want to hear about the nerd groupie who came up to you yesterday. What happened?
To be quite serious about it, a number of young scientists around the country consider the pathway I've taken one that inspires them, and it's really a pleasure to be able to hopefully encourage these young students.
When we found out we were going to be honored to have you on the show, the first thing we did was we looked up where you are on the line of succession.
Yep.
That's by office, and we know obviously Correct. The president, then the vice president, then the speaker of the House, then the president pro tempore of the Senate. And you go all the way down the list. You're third to last, we found out. It's you. It's Arnie Duncan.
And Veterans Affairs, right?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. And then it's the guy who's guarding the front door at the White House, but he's not on the list anymore. That seems insulting. The Secretary of Energy is important. Energy
is
hugely
important.
It
goes by the date of the creation of the Cabinet Department,
right,
I believe.
Exactly.
Oh, is that how it works?
Yeah.
Oh. I thought it was a value judgment.
No.
I thought housing, we need housing more than we need energy, so energy goes beneath housing, or something like that. Do you oversee all things energy? Do you have like a favorite energy drink?
I have a perhaps favorite energy technology, which is solar energy, which I think will be very, very big as we go forward.
Really?
Yep.
Nice pivot on that one, sir. Uh-huh. We were going to get you to wade into that controversial issue of Gatorade versus Powerade, but you went right to your preferred topic. You are a practiced politician. I admire that. Well, Secretary Moniz, we're delighted to have you with us, and we are asking you here to play a game we're calling...
Ernie, meet Bert.
So you're Ernie, right? That's what you like people to call you.
Yeah.
So how much do you know about Bert? We're going to ask you three questions about the Sesame Street character. Get two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl Castle's voice on their voicemail. Bill, who is Secretary Moniz playing for?
Jean Clairfeld of Ossing, New York.
Now, I just wanted to point out that your predecessor in the job, Dr. Stephen Chu, came on the show about 4 years ago, soon after his appointment, and lost big time. He got one right.
And the Nobel Committee came back and took his award
away. They did, yeah.
They ripped off his epaulets, broke his sword over his knee.
I just want to set that mark right there for you. All right.
Okay.
You ready to do this?
I'm ready.
Ever since Bert and Ernie were introduced on Sesame Street as roommates who shared a bedroom, they have been supposed of being gay partners, but not so. In fact, the makers of Sesame Street early on tried to show that Bert was happily heterosexual by showing him doing what? A... eating cheese doodles and watching football until he falls asleep on the couch. B, serenading a woman with the song, I Want to Hold Your Ear. Or C, watching Miss Piggy go by and saying, nice hams.
Well, again, trying to apply some degree of rationality, let me choose number one.
You choose number one, eating Choose Doodles and watching football.
Right.
No, it was actually serenading a woman with the song, I Want to Hold Your Ear.
I see.
Good Lord.
I realize, of course.
And that makes him straight?
Oh, yeah. All right, you still have two more chances to outdo Secretary Chu. Bert and Ernie have had many things named after them in the many years they've been around, including which of these? A, a pair of high-energy particles from outside of the galaxy. B, the fists of ultimate fighting champion Demetrius Johnson, Bert and Ernie. Or C, two gay penguins at the Pittsburgh Zoo.
Another difficult question. I guess as a physicist, I would go with the high-energy particles.
And you would be correct. They're neutrinos.
Right.
They were discovered and then named Bert and Ernie by the Ice Cube Neutrino Observatory. Okay, Secretary Moniz, here is your last question. Get this one right, you win. Bert has played a role in all kinds of dramas all over the world. He's been everywhere. He's done everything. In fact, he was once seen, A, breaking into the White House, B, attending George Clooney's wedding, or C, declaring his allegiance to Osama bin Laden.
Well, I think I will go with George Clooney.
You're going to go with George Clooney. You believe that at George Clooney's wedding in Venice to the acclaimed civil rights lawyer he married, yep, one of the guests of honor was Bert. So is that your choice, Secretary Moniz?
Well, you're suggesting I change it, but I'll stick with it.
You're going to stick with it?
Yeah.
No, the answer was C, declaring his allegiance to Osama bin Laden. Let me explain.
Really?
back around 2000, 2001, some wag put up a site called Evil Bert, depicting Bert from Sesame Street doing evil things, including being dressed as a mujahideen next to Osama bin Laden. And some protesters who were protesting in favor of Osama in Afghanistan printed out these pictures of Osama, not noticing that there was a bearded, evil-looking Bert next to him. So, in fact, Bert from Sesame Street appeared in multiple times at these pro-Osama protests in Afghanistan.
Wow.
Bill, how did Secretary Moniz do on our show?
Well, the secretary got 1 out of 3, which is exactly what the previous secretary got, so you're in very good company.
You can learn more about what Secretary of Energy Ernest Moniz is up to at energy.gov. They got a lot of cool things going on. Secretary Ernest Moniz, thank you so much for joining us here in Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Honored to talk to you.
Thanks very much, sir.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from the Doris Duke Charitable Foundation, working to improve the quality of people's lives by supporting the performing arts, the environment, medical research, and child well-being. Information is available at ddcf.org. The William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people from diverse backgrounds and ensure that they reach their fullest potential. More information is available at wtgrantfoundation.org. Lumber Liquidators, a proud sponsor of NPR, offering more than 400 styles, including hardwood, bamboo, laminate, and vinyl, with flooring specialists in hundreds of stores nationwide. More at lumberliquidators.com or 1-800-HARDWOOD. And the Annie E. Casey Foundation, with more than 25 years of Kids Count data on the well-being of America's children, providing access to national and local information, as well as state rankings. Learn more at datacenter.kidscount.org. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, a benevolent overlord, B.J. Lederman, composed our theme. Thanks to all of the panelists you heard, all our guests, our listener contestants, and, of course, our scorekeeper emeritus, Carl Castle, still our only prize. I'm Peter Sagal, and we'll see you next week. This is NPR.